Then he says, but give these chemicals billions of years to bounce around and anything can happen. At which point any real scientist would stop and say, wait a minute, did you say anything can happen? Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. This is Real Science Radio. I'm Fred Williams.
And I'm Doug McBurney, Bible student, amateur comedian. Fred, it's great to be back in studio. I want to start with a story about, I don't know if it's about worms or oysters, but what caught my attention was the oyster part. And then we've got some really exciting news from the world of evolutionary cosmology. Well, the story's too big. I don't even want to. That's enough of a tease. I can't give the headline, but this is really big. Big.
Okay.
But the worm and the oyster is where I want to start.
Okay.
For obvious reasons.
Yeah. So this is from Science Daily, and this is back in November 5th, 2025. So just, not that long ago.
Yeah, yeah.
480-million-year-old parasite still infects oysters today. And, and the subtitle, a parasite that plagued ancient seas still worms its way into modern oysters.
Shocking.
Half a billion years later.
Okay, now, half a billion.
Half a billion.
Half
just
a billion years.
What's a half a billion between friends?
Yeah, right? It's like you're writing a budget in Washington, D.C., where a half a billion now is, that's like a rounding error.
Yeah.
So, you know, a half a billion here, a half a billion there. Pretty soon you're talking about real money. But before we get to the story of the parasite that appears to not have evolved, which is interesting that a story written by believers in evolutionary biology are pointing out that something appears not to have evolved. But all that aside, how do you feel about eating oysters, Fred?
Well, eating oysters, you know, it's funny you mentioned this because it was just literally this last weekend, Sandy and my son are like, somehow oysters came up. And they're like, I don't think I've ever tried oysters. And like, oh, you did. And I'm like, I did when? And they told me when. And, you know, because I'm aging, I don't remember when they said I did.
Don't remember what you ate.
Yeah. And they said I actually liked them because I like mussels. I like seafood. And they says, you actually liked oysters. I'm like, okay, well, that's good to know. Maybe next time they're on the menu, I might order them.
Okay.
So I think I like them.
You think you like them? You've been told you like them at least. Okay. Well, I thought it was funny that you said oysters came up because that's kind of how I feel about oysters. So
they came up.
Okay. Yeah. If I were to eat oysters, they would probably come up. But I was exposed first to oysters as a young man, and eating them was kind of a dare type thing. We're with some guys who are from the South, and they're implying that being able to eat oysters are you a man or not? Can you eat these oysters or not? And so, of course, all of us ate the oysters and pretended that it was great. But really, I was disgusted, and I thought it was like the most horrible thing I'd ever done. But
are they Rocky Mountain oysters?
No, I don't know. No.
Okay.
I'm not going there. I'm never going to try those.
Yeah, I don't think I will either. That's not really a seafood, that one.
That's not seafood. No, that's grass-fed from what I understand, at least in Colorado. So I went through the oyster eating trauma in order to prove my manhood to these guys from the South who I never saw again. And they had zero impact on my life in any other way. But then, so I wasn't really a fan of oysters until I traveled to New Orleans and I found out that you can deep fry the oysters and then you can put them on this wonderful French baguette bread, smother them in mayonnaise, and it's fantastic. It's called a fried oyster po' boy. Fried oyster po' boy. So there's one way I can eat oysters, and pretty much almost anything is deep fried on a baguette with lots of mayonnaise. I can eat almost anything that way.
Well, I can guarantee whenever I had the oysters that they claimed that I ate, it would have been something like that. It would have been in some kind of really good sauce. Because I can't imagine eating oysters right out of the shell. It'd be a slippery, yucky.
You would remember that.
Yeah.
And no matter how bad you're
you still have your hypothalamus is still.
Yeah, my hypothalamus was damaged at least from that. But I did go through it. But so regardless of how we feel about oysters, and hopefully we haven't hurt anyone's feelings or offended anyone who is a really big fan of oysters, you have to be really careful these days because people are very sensitive and you don't want to tread on somebody's. Somebody might draw a significant amount of their self-esteem from their relationship with oysters, and we don't want to hurt you in any way.
We don't. And if you want, we can create a safe zone. So, Doug, if I ever offend you, over here is a little side room.
Yeah.
You know, that could be our safe room.
Okay. So we've got a safe zone. It has two sliding doors so that you can enter from the left or the right because we don't discriminate.
Yep.
And then you can close yourself in and sit in the dark for a little while. All right.
So, Doug, imagine not changing your lifestyle for nearly half a billion years. I mean, that's what they're claiming with this.
Yeah.
These oysters.
Yes. Yes.
It just never changed its lifestyle.
Uh huh.
And have you changed your lifestyle since you were born?
Well, I've changed my lifestyle significantly just since I tried those oysters. Yes, absolutely. So there are claims out there that I've heard since I was in third grade that everything is constantly evolving. Because I remember asking my teacher, how come I can't see the monkeys evolving? And they say, well, it happens really slow. And then I would ask, how come there are still monkeys? Well, not every monkey evolved. What are you, stupid kid? And I'm like, I'm just asking questions. You know, I don't get all this. So somehow this is one of those parasites, which is a little worm, that somehow got left out of the evolutionary event and just has stayed the same, according to evolutionary biologists, for nearly 500 million years, 470 million years. And they say it's not similar. It's not somewhat like its ancestral form. It's the same.
It's the same, yeah.
470 million years later.
So these researchers, they were looking at these fossil shells from Morocco, and they found these distinct question mark-shaped burrows, and they recognized that pattern immediately, because guess what? That same parasite that never changed for half a billion years makes the same burrows today in modern oysters.
Yeah, and you throw those ones away. You don't eat them if they got that shape on there, right? It's like that one's got the parasite.
And it says they are spinid worms. They bore into the shell, not the meat, destabilizing the oyster.
Oh.
And so the fossils showed exactly the same boring pattern, the exact same thing in what's supposed to be half a billion years old.
Mm-hmm.
The same shape, scale, same behavior. And the headlines, Doug, of course, they're trained. They've got this bias. They call it, this is an evolutionary success.
Oh, I get it. I bet I can tell you. They're going to say that this thing evolves so perfectly that natural selection hasn't had to make any changes for 470 billion million years. Did I say billion? I'm sorry. When I said billion, I meant million.
And so this creature, I guess, him and his many ancestors, family tree, all of, you know, from granddad all the way down to great-great-great-granddad, all these worms through time.
Yeah.
They got to see the rise of fish.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Emergence of land life.
Oh, wait, are you reading from the article?
I'm not, but dinosaurs come and go. Mammals evolve, primates evolve, humans evolve. They got to see all of this.
Oh, wow. Those
not change a bit. And I'm not changing.
Right.
His lifestyle. So the worm's like, yeah, no, I'm good. So
This
isn't evolution, Doug. We kid around, but this is stasis. The Bible says that living things reproduce according to their kind, and they don't change into new kinds. This thing is the same as it was when God created it.
And
we see that everywhere. The entire fossil record is full of stasis. That's why I think it was Stephen Jay Gould who postulated punctuated equilibrium, that everything happened so fast that we didn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you see stasis in the fossil record. In fact, he said that stasis in the fossil record was evidence for his punctuated equilibrium, that things happen so fast in small, isolated environments, you don't see them.
Uh-huh.
Silly. Circular reasoning. But that's what you end up with when you try to cling to this view that everything's millions and billions of years. They have this worldview, they're indoctrinated, and they can't just say, hey, you know, this is pretty good evidence that this is the same, this creature didn't evolve for millions of years, and it's all part of the recent creation about 6,000 years ago.
Yes, which was a success, by the way. We're going to call this a creation success. God created this worm to do its thing with the oysters, and it's been working perfectly for roughly 5,864 years, or give or take.
Yeah, and one of our new bylines that we've stolen, we've plagiarized rather badly.
Though. Yes.
We could get in trouble.
Well, no, we do give him credit every time.
We do. So. We give him credit every time. Dr. Joel Brown.
That's right.
Of CRS. He's now the director of the Creation Research Society. We had him on it's been about 2 months now. It was a really good show. I recommend people go watch it. Really good show. Well, all science is creation science.
All science is creation science. Dr. Joel Brown standing on the shoulders of Kevin Anderson over there.
Absolutely.
By the way.
Yeah. Yeah. So phenomenal. We had a recent news show, and you should go back and watch that on science. And we talk about that with the immune system. So highly
encourage
that episode.
All science is creation science, even this parasite that. Now, I wonder if this is off topic, but you know, you think of the creation, and at the end of 6 days, everything was good. And then it was very good, which that's better than good.
It was perfect.
Right?
Good.
So were there parasites infecting oysters before the fall? I'll save that one to ask God when I get to heaven.
Yeah, well, you know, I would say that there was some symbiotic relationship, perhaps.
Oh, and maybe that relationship isn't what it used to be because of the fall.
Yeah.
But it's quite possible, you know, and this could be with viruses and bacteria, the chances are there were symbiotic relationships that were all good before the fall that are just now flawed.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's all interesting stuff to look at. And
well, speaking of interesting, I think this is the right time for interesting fact of the week, because the question I have to ask you, the interesting fact, actually plays into this.
Okay.
So let's take...
Wait a minute. Have we finished with this worm? I mean, this worm's been hanging out for 480 million years, and you're going to do like 10 minutes on it?
That worm about 5 minutes of justice for his 500 million year lifespan.
He's been hanging in there for so long, waiting for his big break. All right.
Okay, so here's the interesting fact of the week. What actually causes a pearl to form inside of an oyster?
Oh, that's too easy, Fred. Although, this is one of those things that I've always assumed I knew.
Okay.
That I might end up being wrong about. Okay, but I've always assumed that what happened was a grain of sand gets inside the shell, and the oyster is moving around trying to get the sand out, and it rubs all up against the mother of pearl and eventually gets bigger and bigger and bigger until it becomes a pearl. That's not right! I had such a sophisticated... There were several events that I've all had in my mind this whole time about how a pearl forms.
Think about how, with the creation, the fall of creation, how God can still take something that's bad and kind of make something good out of it.
Okay.
And so we were just talking about a parasite. So it's a parasite or irritant.
Uh-huh.
What forms the pearl. So the parasite helps do it. So next time, does your wife have a pearl necklace? Mine does, but she doesn't wear it because I guess they're out of style.
Yeah, my wife has some pearls, but...
Yeah, say, hey, you know that pearl necklace? That was made by a bunch of parasites, or a parasite. Yeah, a bunch of parasites. That's a parasite necklace.
Oh, man, that would not go over well.
So.
Okay, so there's a parasitic involvement that I was not aware of, but at least I was on the right track with these irritated.
Yeah,
right?
Maybe it's possible that sand maybe occasionally, but apparently from my research, and you know what, we could be wrong, you know, check us out, because I had to look this one up pretty quickly because I forgot about the interesting fact of the week, and so I did a quick interesting fact related to pearls. So I'm relying on the internet telling me correctly. Uh-huh. It may not. Sometimes we find out it doesn't.
Well, you know what I've noticed is that there are a lot of good biology and naturalist researchers who are out there doing good science. And my guess is We might know something about pearl formation now that we didn't know 50 years ago when I was told how pearls formed by, I think my kindergarten teacher might have told me how she thought pearls formed. And chances are we've discovered some things since then. Another interesting deep topic that we could get into. We can either do it here on Real Science Radio or we can save these notes when we get to heaven.
So next, Doug, is... they've figured out, and I think your teacher told you this too, one of the teachers, the origin of life. They figured it out, Doug.
This is the big news. Scientists say they may have just figured out the origin of life.
So they may have.
May have just figured out. But I remember my sixth grade science teacher that he told me they had figured it out back then, which was quite some time ago. But here, it seems like they may have just figured it out.
It's like when they say they found the missing link. So they're admitting the link was missing all that time. And then they find out it's not a missing link. And then, but later on, you're going to find out they finally found the missing link.
You know? Yes, and someone needs to point out that you can only find the missing link once. That's it. Then, okay. So is the missing link that they keep finding, is it the missing link? And is this theory, the latest theory that we'll talk a little bit about here, about the origin of life, is it... really, have they really figured anything out? Well, that's why they put may have in the title of the article. They ask, how did the building blocks of life come together to spawn the first organisms? It's one of the most long-standing questions in biology, and scientists just got a major clue. First of all, so we have a book that tells us how the building blocks of life came together. Mm-hmm. So they didn't just come together. First of all, where did the building blocks for life come from? Yeah. Forget about how did they come together. Where did they come from? Well, it hasn't been a long-standing question here at Real Science Radio. But out there in the world, there are actually smart, intelligent people who earn a living serving their fellow human beings. They're obviously functional people in the world who are pursuing these questions. These poor people, I pity them. To be expending so much valuable energy on such silliness.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Complete waste of time.
Yes.
Complete waste. And Dr. James Tour, we've had him on the show several times, and he does a tremendous job refuting all these guys that come out and claim they found they figured it out. Mm-hmm. So here in this case, you know, they're referring, Doug, to amino acids that have been found. So they talk about how they've been found longer than life has been on our planet. They've been around longer.
Uh-huh.
Why? Because they've found amino acids plus all the five major ingredients of DNA and RNA called nucleotides on asteroid samples.
Oh.
Plucked directly from outer space.
And so, for them, this proves that the amino acids must have been around before there was life, because, of course, the comets and asteroids have been flinging around in space since the primordial formation, 4 billion, 13 billion, I forget how many billion, but it's several billions of years.
And the secular idea is that, well, that's how life got seeded here, from asteroids.
Right.
And unfortunately, there are even... you know, there's creation scientists who have opposed the idea that they found amino acids. Well, now that we've actually plucked them right off of asteroids.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this supports the hydroplate theory. All these rocks that are in space floating around, all these rock piles, dirty snowballs, all these, they're ugly too, Doug. Mm-hmm. These things are ugly.
Yeah.
God didn't create those things as just ugly garbage he's going to put in space flying around.
That might hit something and hurt something.
It came from Earth.
Yeah.
It came from the fountains of the great deep.
The best evidence I've seen.
Oh, absolutely.
They come from the Earth.
And you find a rock on the moon. I've mentioned this many times, but in case you haven't heard it,
mm-hmm.
you find a rock. Alan Shepard finds a rock on the moon that came from 20 kilometers beneath the Earth's surface in a watery environment. That's NASA.
Wow.
That's NASA, people. That isn't us trying to promote the hydroplate theory.
Although we do promote the hydroplate theory.
We do.
Relatively unashamed.
But it's not us here. That's NASA.
Yeah.
Saying they found a rock on the moon that came from the Earth's watery environment 20 kilometers beneath the Earth's surface.
Mm-hmm.
And if they found one rock, if Alan Shepard stepped on one rock, is that a fluke rock?
That just made, super lucky that
he won the Earth rock lottery by stepping on the one rock.
Yes.
There's actually this piece of rock embedded in this other rock. It's like, no, there's a lot of rocks from the Earth that came from a watery environment because the front side of the moon is peppered as it would with this event that occurred. Hydroplate theory explains it wonderfully.
Yep. Check it out. In the beginning, the ninth edition will be available, hopefully for Christmas.
Pretty soon, yeah.
We'll be selling it here at Real Science Radio.
Absolutely.
Yes, and so we want to... Oh, by the way, I believe it aired not too long ago with Kevin Lee. There will be a prediction. There was a prediction made, I'm sorry, about what will be observed when researchers take a look at Dimorphos and the effects of that DART mission where we smacked that little satellite into the rock, what turned out to be a flying rock pile, by the way.
Yeah.
There is a prediction timestamp, date stamp. We're not going to be able to deny it. If we're proven to be wrong, it'll be right out there, hanging right out there. But if we're proven to be right, it'll be out there. We put it out there because this is the best evidence we've seen for why things look the way they do. And
yeah,
Dr. Brown started with the Bible. And so that's a great place to start when you're trying to explain why are things the way they are. Good place to start is in the Bible and in Genesis. And in fact, you should start with this sentence if you're starting a research project. In the beginning, that's the best sentence.
In the beginning, God.
There you go. Start there. Yeah. All right. So now, do we have anything more? Oh, I do want to talk a little bit about journalism. Because the way the article is written here in, I believe this was picked up by Yahoo News, which, what is that? To even say Yahoo News, I feel like I'm in a cartoon. But Yahoo News, it's basically what's left of parts of the Associated Press and parts of Newsweek magazine and some other aging liberals who, anyway, they edit for Yahoo News and they hire young journalist reporter types, I guess. I don't think they even call themselves reporters anymore. They call themselves journalists because reporter just isn't fancy enough. But reporters are valuable because reporters go and they get the facts and hey, headline, here's what happened. And they tell you what happened. But journalists are more storytellers, which if you're going to report on stories like this, you really want to be a storyteller. Listen to how the Yahoo News journalist, he says, the curious thing about amino acids, though, is that they don't easily link together. Something has to kickstart the chemistry that allows life as we know it.
So imagine a Scrabble board. You got all these letters and they're scrambled.
Yeah.
And that's what they have. And so they need to somehow make those things come together and form coherent words, basically.
Yes, yes.
Now,
and you're not supposed to notice that in the headline were the words origin of life, but they don't want you to. Where did the letters come from that are scattered all over the board? You know, you're not supposed to ask that. We're talking about the origin of life. It's like, well, but that the word origin. You're supposed to keep going on and listen to this. There's a new study, and it's published in the journal Nature. Oh, there's supposed to be like violins and the big kettle drums. A team of biologists threw together a watery stew of pantothene and amino acids. The amino acids reacted with the compound to create aminoacyl thiol. This thiol, combined with free-floating RNA in water at a neutral pH to start a reaction that transferred the amino acids to the RNA, linking them together. Okay, so I want to object to the phrase threw together a watery stew, because you can't then describe the watery stew in as much detail as you just described it and still call it a watery stew. And you can't say they threw it together. That's not what happened. They put this all together very carefully in an experiment to try to make something happen. And guess what? They made it happen. Why did they make it happen? Because they were intelligently putting things together to try to make make something happen. They didn't throw together a watery stew. Thank you very much, Mr. Journalist.
Right. Yeah, so the article does mention this Dr. Nick Lane. He's an original life chemist at UCL who wasn't involved in the study. First of all, why would anybody be an origin of life chemist? It's a complete waste of time. Can you imagine going through your entire life, you're going to meet the creator of the universe, and what'd you do? You know, you come to the pearly gates. Mm-hmm. Bad analogy, but you know, you're facing God, Jesus, the creator.
Yeah.
What was your job? You know, because God will ask questions like that. He knows what the answer is, obviously, but...
Oh, but he wants to give you a chance to explain yourself.
What did you do for your career? Oh, I was an origin of life chemist. You know, by the way, I was the origin of life. I originated everything. So, do you know anything about me? Well, no, I think it was a stew of amino acids. And by then they're going to be so, you know, frightened. And I mean, you're in the hands of the living.
Well, that's right. Yeah. There won't be any smart aleck answers.
There won't be. And So this Nick Lane said this, he cautioned to the magazine that the amino acid chains being produced are random and chaotic, unlike the orderly arrangements produced by ribosomes, the ones that God creates.
Yes.
And remember, we've had Dr. Royal Truman on. We've had Dr. James Tour. Well, Royal Truman, he was a professional chemist. He did it for a living. I believe he got his PhD from Michigan State. And he said, we asked him, what do chemists, you know, all your chemistry engineer buddies think of origin of life? They're like, they kind of just ignore it because it's silly. There's no evidence for it. And I remember one of the things he said is they'll alter the experiment to stop at just the right time, because if you run it slightly too long.
Yes,
Everything dies off. So they have to control this experiment. Where is that really how things happen in this premortal soup? It knew right when to stop. No. So there's no way you can do this. Yes. This guy, Nick Lane, said they still have not cracked that problem.
Mm-hmm. And then here it is.
They do. They say they've found, you know, they've solved the origin of life.
Well, they do put in the art. This is why you have to read things like a lawyer.
Yeah.
They may have just figured out. Please don't assume that we're making any assertion that anything has actually happened. We're just reporting on what may have happened.
And like you said, they just figured it out, but they keep just figuring it out every couple months.
Yes. And then the author of the article, whose name I did not take down, which I probably should have, because he should be embarrassed in front of his mother for writing this at the end of the article. He literally writes, the author of the article at Yahoo News, he writes, well, they haven't cracked that problem. He quotes the scientist, Mr. Lane. And then he says, but give these chemicals billions of years to bounce around and anything can happen. At which point any real scientist would stop and say, wait a minute. Did you say anything can happen? Because there's a rule in science that you eliminate things that are absurd. And I think that somewhere along the line in the origin of life research community, the idea of eliminating the absurd had to be eliminated itself. You're no longer allowed to eliminate the absurd, because the absurd is necessary to try to form your science, of a foundation for your science. Instead of eliminating the absurd, deleting the absurd, you have to assume the absurd and start with the absurd. And it's all very absurd.
And so I just found the full article in Nature magazine. They actually have the whole thing published where anybody can read it online now, because it's from August 27th this year.
Okay.
And so these are the guys that are going to have to face the actual creator who actually made these amino acids, these letters, and formed the words and the sentences and the words. And here we are, you know, product of that. So Joya T. Singh, Benjamin Thoma, Daniel Whitaker, Max Satterley Webley, Yoan Yao, and Matthew W. Pounder. I would not want to be one of those guys. We hope they repent before.
Amen.
They meet the creator of the universe and say, what's this article here in Nature magazine you're part of that you have your name on, where you say you're implying that you figured out the origin of life? And why are you wasting time? What good is it doing for mankind? Is anything coming out of this?
Well, good. Good for calling them out by name, Fred. And so I want to call out Frank Landymore over at, if that's your real name, sir. Frank Land, if... If you, I'm assuming it's a guy. His name's Frank Landymore. I'm calling you out, Frank. You should be embarrassed, and your mother should know what you wrote.
He identifies as a hot dog. He's Frank.
Anyway, Frank, it's just embarrassing. Can I use the term that I use on my show? I don't know. I call them urinalists, not journalists.
Okay.
I call them urinalists because this is what they're engaged in, and it's of no value. It's basically they're spewing out a waste product that is not worthy of the amount of time that it takes to consume this article seriously. See, here at Real Science Radio, we don't take this seriously. As soon as you see the headline, scientists may have figured out scientists say they may have just figured out the origin of life. See, we just look at that and we're like, well, this is great. This is like, we can do a show on this. We can do a whole show on this one headline probably. But there are normal people, not like us, we're not normal, but there are normal people who read this article, young people especially, who are somewhat bamboozled by it for real. And it's dangerous and it's embarrassing. And Frank, you should be ashamed of yourself. And all the researchers willing to put their name on such a statement of such wild hubris to assume that you could find the origin of frankly anything. To assume that is just, it's just highly problematic. I'll just, for judgment day, I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. So Doug, we got a couple more here. So here's one we got from one of our friends at Real Science Radio who emails in. We get a lot of emails. We love it. Thank you.
Yes.
You send us your stories because we don't see all of these and we really appreciate it. So this one is 110 million year old dinosaur mummy.
Oh.
Discovered in Canada stuns scientists with intact skin and organs.
Oh, yes.
Why is it stunning them? This has been
happening
for decades now.
Right.
Discovery of soft tissue dinosaurs.
Yeah, at the beginning of the article, it says what paleontologists are calling a once-in-a-lifetime discovery. And I'm thinking, hello? Have you guys not been paying attention for like the last 20 years of what's been going on?
Well, every other month, they just figure something out. And every other month, they have a once-in-a-lifetime discovery.
That's right.
Well, that once-in-a-lifetime has happened quite a few times here in the last 10
Yes.
20 years. You've got to start paying attention.
And so in the article, by the way, on the Canadian dinosaur mummy, they do say that the mummy had soft tissues clinging to its bones, an almost unheard of condition in dinosaurs. So Fred, the truth is making some progress, probably thanks to Real Science Radio and Bob Enyart's soft tissue page, that people are realizing that this is almost unheard of, which means it's not unheard of, which means it's actually becoming more and more common, and we should start cracking open every dinosaur fossil there is just to see exactly how much soft tissue is out there. I think we would be fairly shocked.
Yeah, and you know, we have so many others. Like, we have this from the Dobrynin family, and I appreciate you sending these in. This and guess what? It's another example of how they just rewrote the origin story. So the article is,
right,
a million-year-old fossil just rewrote the origin story of humanity. So another case of,
man,
they keep rewriting it.
They just figured it out. And now they're rewriting.
But that's how science progresses. You know, we
learn. Okay. Okay, so here's the thing about real science. Real science does always progress. And there are areas where we are always learning new things as we look more and more closely at God's creation. But to have the foundations of your science utterly overturned every 6 to 18 months, I'm sorry, that's not real science.
No.
I'm sorry. That doesn't work.
And, you know, we've had scientists on the show, Dr. Carl Werner, about how there's so many of these ape frauds. They're not just accidental deceptions. You know, you can believe something
and deceive
somebody. We all have believed something and promoted it and found out later it's not true, but we weren't doing it out of deceit. We were trying to trick people. Well, Dr. Carl Werner has at least 200 documented cases of actual fraud where they knew that they were committing a fraud.
Yes.
With this stuff. So human origins is fraught with fraud.
Mm-hmm.
Did I say that right, Doug? Fraught with fraud.
Yes. And origin of life chemistry and research is fraught with Well, it's stupidity, frankly. Yep. And it's embarrassing that grown men and women would waste their time with such silliness. All right.
As Bill Murray once said in Groundhog Day, what a complete waste of time.
That's brilliant in comparison. Yeah. Let's see. What else do we have, Fred, now that we've figured out the origin of life and then rewritten it all within a half hour of Real Science Radio? You tune in here to get the breaking big time news about everything that's may have thought to have been said to be alleged to be true and or real.
Yep.
Possibly.
Yeah. So, Doug, it's great to have you back in the studio. Thank you for your time. I think we're out of time, right?
Oh, already?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, it always goes too fast.
It does. And we have so many stories. People send us in, and we try to hit ones we can. And
please sending them. Keep sending them. Yes, yes. We have tons of good stuff. Yes, we always appreciate your input and helping us stay on the air. By the way, you can go to realscienceradio.org, and you can subscribe. You can sponsor a show. You can order products like in the beginning, the 9th edition. You can pre-order it. Pre-order the 9th edition. We have to get that product in there. All right.
And our last month was Telethon Month, and we got some sponsors for shows. We appreciate that.
Yeah, that's right.
For as many as we can get. It, you know, help us out. Helps with everything, with the editing, promoting, you know, whatever, as we try to get the truth out there, because this is where you're going to get real science.
Amen.
And you know, Doug, we'll make mistakes here and there. We all do.
Yes.
But the mistakes we make, they're not intentional. And let us know if you think something's in error. Leave a comment. We're trying to pay attention more to comments, to interact with people. We know we get a lot of, you know, Professor Dave.
Oh, yes, on the YouTube. Yes, yeah. Yes. Oh, that.
Never have anything scientific to say, oh, you're wrong and you're idiots, blah, 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 blah. Okay, well, how about telling us, giving us an
example? Well, I thought there was one pretty good comment, Fred. We put up a blooper reel on the YouTube channel, and one of our good friends, he posted under there, every show by these guys is a blooper reel. I actually laughed at that. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah. I'll have to work on another blooper show for the end of the year.
Yeah, well, I try to do all I can to contribute to that, Fred. Yep. Awesome. Yes, it's always fun. And please stay tuned. We look forward to, we're coming into the new year here soon. Yeah. A year before you know it. And we'll be looking forward.
We're going forward. More shorts that we're going to be putting out. And just, you know, pay attention and let us know, again, with your articles, ideas, news stories that you see. We really appreciate your input. And so, looking forward to another great year of Real Science Radio.
Should be fun.
Yep. All right. So, for my co-host, Doug McBurney, I'm Fred Williams of Real Science Radio. May God bless you. Intelligent.